Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, good morning. This is Melissa Enoch DeBerry with Talk with Trinity, a show that is dedicated to the education, enrichment, and enlightenment of all individuals. I am Melissa Enoch DeBerry, a licensed clinical addiction specialist, and I'm glad to be here this morning. We just want to first say this, give glory to God for allowing us to wake this morning, for allowing us to be here, for allowing us the opportunity to share our wisdom, knowledge, and instruction. And we want to thank God for our guest this morning, Ms. Latonya Summers, who is going to help to share with us this morning what we're titling as Dear Black Mothers. God, we know that you are here with us. It says that we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. And God, that is what we want to do this morning. This show is sponsored by Trinity Counseling Services, 1801 North Tryon Street, Suite 311B, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28206, 704-333-2446, and Trinity Counseling Services, Burlington, 508 Holly Hill Lane, Suite 102E, Burlington, North Carolina, 27215, 336-675-0075. We do have a guest this morning, Ms. Latonya Summers. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yes, ma'am. And if anyone desires to call in and ask Ms. Summers any questions or call into the program with any questions you might have, the guest call-in number is 347-945-5924. Again, it's 347-945-5924. And we are talking about the March is the month that we celebrate a lot of things. It is American Red Cross, National Professional Social Work, National Nutrition Month, and it is also Mental Health Month, I believe. And so for the month of March, we have been talking about stressors, which is anything or anyone or any situation about which you experience pressure and tension. So this morning, let's just go into our conversation about Dear Black Mothers. We are highlighting an organization that's been working in the community since 1993, helping mothers and families of murder victims through encouragement, resources, and information, which is Mothers Against Murder Offering. I'm going to turn the program over now to you, Ms. Summers.
Okay. Yay, thank you so much. And Melissa, like you said, March is a month for so many different things. It is also Women's Month. And so I just think it's just timely to bring this particular topic to your broadcast and to your audience. But Dear Black Mothers, I don't know if you know, but I'm a student at UNCC in their doctoral program, and I've been challenged to deal with one of my biggest fears. And so I have quite a few of them, but one of my biggest fears is losing one of my sons. And so I kind of thought of this particular program to say, let's start a conversation with other black moms who might be just as afraid of as I am about losing our children. And what in the world do we do to save our children? That fear and an assignment for class led me to do some work with Mothers of Murdered Offspring, the organization that you've already mentioned. And so what I do with Mothers of Murdered Offspring is go to the candlelight vigils where I get to experience that up front, the grief of moms. And we just help them begin the grief process through these candlelight vigils. And it's just the saddest thing. Some of the vigils that I attend, I don't even know the victims, Melissa. But just seeing grief-stricken moms help puts me closer in touch to the fear that I have about losing my own sons. And, you know, it's just incredible. And it's an honor and a privilege to be able to share in the grief of those moms. And I think, what can those of us in the community do to help keep our children safe, especially at a time like this? This is just a crazy time.
Well, let's go back 1 second. I didn't know that was the opportunity that you chose with that organization. Now, you know, individuals that are listening, you know, you hear, you know, the different movements, Black Lives Matter and,
yes,
you know, all the other movements, and then, you know, whether that's a valid statement or whether,
yeah,
that's, you know, something that's a real thing. And you're saying that when you attend those candlelight vigils, when,
yeah,
when individuals have lost you know, dealing with grief and death is not new. You know, the media is giving a perspective of the emotions, but can you kind of describe, have you been able to talk with some of the individuals out there, like the different ones, mothers, and what are some of the things they're saying?
So I think when it comes to grief, if it's anticipated, it's like, okay, we can deal with that. Anticipated means you know somebody's, you know, going to die. You know, maybe they have cancer or they're older or children just expect that one day you're going to bury your folks. But when it's not anticipated, it's considered complicated grief. So parents who are burying their children, that kind of grief is complex and complicated, and you can see it at the candlelight vigils. And the candlelight vigils occur, of course, before burials. So it's one of the first times that families are get to grieve publicly. Their first attempt at grieving publicly. And so it's not organized. You know, sometimes what you see at a funeral, you think is, you know, chaotic, you know, and a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But try doing it at a vigil outside, public, and you just have no idea who's there. I draw people who are hurting, and I am naturally drawn to people who are hurting. So at the vigils, I go to the moms. You know, I go straight to the moms and ask, you know, if there's anything I can do, or, you know, oftentimes they just want a hug or they just want, you know, to be held, you know, someone to hold them up as they are grieving. So there are not many words shared. You know, there's an opportunity for family members to say something. At either one of the vigils I've attended, I've not seen a mom say anything, cannot speak, but siblings or friends and coworkers, you know, give remarks and those kinds of things. But also at the vigils, balloons are released. Seven balloons are released probably for biblical purposes, but seven balloons are released. The last balloon to be released is the mom's. I've never been to a vigil where a mom readily released that balloon. Oftentimes it has to be pried out of her hands or with the help of someone else to help her release that balloon. Saddest thing, and I'm like, so that we are not sitting at our own vigils, what can we do to save our kids? And that's the conversation I want to have. What can we do to save our children? Did I answer your question, Melissa?
You answered it, and I've had this conversation because I try to prepare. I'm doing a better job of preparing when I come on the air because I want to, as a counselor, you know, I don't know who's listening, and I, you know, and sometimes people say, well, we don't need counseling. We don't need to pay somebody to talk. You know, we have our mothers or we have our sisters.
Yeah.
So I always usually run these things across with my with the clients that I have in group. You know, I'll mention it. I'll say, well, you know, I'm doing this program. And so this week I said, well, I'm doing this program, and I want to talk about it. It just so happened that I have, you know, individuals that have experienced. And I said, well, what are some of the feelings that you have? And what I hear you saying from the mothers is they have a hard time letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that feeling of not wanting to let go, oftentimes, you know, maybe it inhibits them from going into, you know, all-out grief because, you know, they may be angry about the situation or, you know, they run through that. So, and like you say, when those individuals, the mothers, hold on to those balloons, and it's like, but the balloon is a representative. So, you ask the question, what can we do to maybe protect our kids from these things, and I really don't know the answer. I remember, and this is random. I started looking back over. I remember when Mothers Against Murder and Offspring originally formed, and I remember the situations that occurred as a reason that that it was formed, and partially was a reason because it did not seem that individuals cared about the individuals who had passed away, you know, through violence. And so I saw some of those feelings as being anger. And then I guess it doesn't help any when it's like, it's almost like, you know, it's not even being considerate, you know. So when you, and then it's, I guess the other feelings is maybe lack of trust, you know, depending on the situation. And so I really don't have an answer on what we can do to help our young people, except, you know, maybe go back to the foundation of the program, which is let's look at prevention, you know, in relationships. And I think that what we're doing now is developing, you know, the conversation and the communication that we need to talk to one another.
Yes. Yeah, you raise, you know, quite a few good points there, that as an African-American community, we still, although we are coming to counseling more, which is a blessing, the majority of us think exactly like you said. We have girlfriends, we have, you know, we have our family members. We don't need to pay someone to talk. So the value of it is still not recognized, and that just stems from some of us grew up in houses where we were taught what happens in this house stays in this house. You know, you don't take it outside of the house, or you look good on the outside, and the inside will take care of itself. You know, so, you know, we grew up, you know, being secretive about how we feel, and you're right, we were taught not necessarily to trust, and not only from our own house, man, we live in a world that's systemically oppressed us, so, you know, we have trust issues. You know, that just compounds the trust issues anyway. So, but yes, counseling does help, because some people don't know how to grieve, and some people, their grief is prolonged, you know, unnecessarily, and that seems harsh. Like, how do you put a time limit on someone's grief? But sometimes we grieve unhealthily because we are not talking about grief. We don't know how to grieve. And that can be, you know, evidenced by our funerals, you know, and some people come to our funerals because they know it's going to be a spectacle, but just not knowing how to grieve, you know, is demonstrated by, you know, our funerals or our anger or some of the abuses we take up on ourselves as a result of this unhealthy coping. So, and you're absolutely right. I don't even have the answers. Like, how do we protect our kids? Did you see, do you watch Black-ish?
I sometimes, yeah, I do.
Sometimes, I love the show. The very last episode they did that was called Hope, and they talked about this particular issue. The main character, Anthony Anderson, who plays the father, Dre, simply said, said to his wife, even if our children do exactly what we tell them to do, if you are stopped by the police, do everything he says, you know, don't raise your voice, even if they do everything that we tell them to do, it still won't prevent them, it still may not prevent them from getting killed. If they do everything they say, maybe they won't even make it to the police station. And then he named, you know, like Sandra Bland, she didn't make it to the police station. Or, you know, what if they die on the way to the police station? So, you know, it's like, you know, even if we tell them to do all these things, it's still not a guarantee that their lives will be saved, you know. And that is what makes me afraid as a mom of Black children.
You know, when you said that, the first thing that I said, the question, what are the issues or problems that are faced? And the one thing that I know to be certain is there's nothing new that occurs under the sun. So what did our forefathers do when they were standing in the, you know, because, you know, standing in the streets, being sprayed with hoses, having dogs kicked upon them, you know, what did we do then? And I think the one thing that we did in the short view was we showed up. And I remember that in some areas, remember they used to have a wake where, I mean, it would last, some wakes, you know, they would lay the body in state, and it would be in state for like a week, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that the time was important, because it allowed people, you know, just the time, you know, you respected the person that was deceased, you know, you allow them to lay there, you know, allow the family members, sometimes they had it in the house, you know, so they were, that person was still a respected member, you know, of the family. And then when it got to the funeral, you know, that's why I don't know this to be certain, but that's where the funeral processional occurred, you know, and then you would line up according to, you know, the elders, and then, you know, and then they would tear it out, and it was almost like, okay, that gave us a format of what to do, you know, at least in that. And then I remember that, you know, you can go in some older people's homes now, and they still got pictures, old pictures of people that were going on or something like my auntie that used to save all of the obituaries and just show up. And then it's almost like everybody automatically assumed their positions. You know, you had the ones who cooked. No one had to be told what to do. They did things automatically.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that. And I still know some of that stuff because I still do some of that stuff, and I teach my kids to do some of that stuff. But I don't think that a lot of people even recognize that because of, you know, not knowing that all of that was purposeful. So I'm just back to education. You know, go back to our original rituals.
Yeah.
You know, because I believe those were helpful.
Yeah, I agree with you. In even saving our children, I think we need to go back to some of the foundation and structures of Black families, the way it used to be, you know, and certainly not in all cases, but there were some foundational things that saved us. We knew not to disrespect authority, but now, you know, you see, you know, children, you know, talking back or, you know, challenging authority. You know, you can see it in the classrooms and in the community. So I agree. And then we honored the deceased. We honored people's lives and what they did for us. We made sure that their lives weren't in vain. So I don't know if it's as a result of so many losses at this point, or, you know, we live in a society where we're desensitized, so we just don't honor people, you know, we just don't honor the deceased like we used to. You know, I think there's a lot of contributing factors to that.
Well, to go back to, you know, thinking about stresses, I was having this conversation. You know, you can go in some war-torn areas, you can go in some inner cities, and if you have been conditioned to hearing gunfire, bombs, you know, it's like they tell you, like with post-traumatic stress disorder or syndrome, that you know, sometimes people are desensitized to, you know, trauma because it becomes an everyday occurrence. And so you don't even know to be afraid because what is the fear? Your fear is gone. So I think that's the other part about it is teaching our kids that there are certain situations you do not take yourself into. You know, I mean, it's unfortunate, but there are certain places that you just don't need to go. You don't need to be out all times of the night. I mean, because going back to that worries your parents. That worries, you know, that's just being respectful. Why are you outside at all hours of the night? And then, you know, I said this to my group one day. I said, just because your family members don't tell you that it disturbs them or it bothers them does not mean that it doesn't bother them. Ask them. And I think that if you ask them and get the answer for it, I think that then you may reconsider, you know, a whole lot of things that you do. And I think that then that would diminish a whole lot of things that happened that caused, you know, all of these concerns. And then just to go back to you saying these mothers not wanting to let go, what if there are mothers who have done all they could for their kids and then something still happens?
Oh, absolutely. I think I do, like you said, group work. I have done some parenting groups with parents, and I say to them, hey, these kids these days are different. Would you guys agree? And resoundingly, they're all like, yes, these kids are different. And then I submit, well, here's a harder pill to swallow. The kids today are different because the parents are different. And then we give examples.
That's right.
One young lady said, you know what, you know, I was late to group. I was late to this parenting group tonight because on my way, my child called and said her car broke down. So I had to go and help her. I said, now, if it was your mom and you had called to say that your car broke down, how would that have been different? She said, honey, I knew not to even call my mother because her expectation was you need to take care of it. You grown enough to drive and do A, B, and C, you need to take care of it. But again, these kids are different these days because the parents are different. We just don't do things that our parents did, some of the foundational stuff. You know, when I sat on a PTA board, I had to tell parents, check your child's book bag. You know, something as simple as that. It's like, yes, you know, I don't know, not to insult intelligence, but it's like, yes, you check your child's book bag.
Well, just having a conversation, why are you allowing your child to be on the Internet in a room with a door closed? I mean, Why is the door closed in your house?
I know. Old school parenting. Old school parenting. There were no doors on the hinges.
Why do you have a computer inside of a room where you can't observe it? I mean,
I know.
I'm just asking these questions. I'm still fairly mother, but some things just didn't make any sense. I don't even recall having a TV in my room until I was much older.
That's right.
or a phone, for that matter.
But then honoring today's time, I don't know. It's there are probably a handful of parents who parent that way. I grew up in a house where it was an open door policy. You didn't close doors in this house. Your name is not on the mortgage. That's, I was just thinking
that out loud. That was the other, my other thing was I watched the interview with the lady, one of the Columbine kids. And, it was one mother that was willing to be interviewed and then the other parents that were not. And, the one question she said is she did not even suspect anything about her child, but then she recanted it by saying, but she noticed that he began to change some of his friends, but she was saying how she was driving almost an hour to work.
And
I hear that a lot. And then when things happen, it's almost like the initial part of it is my fault. Like I should have been more aware, or I should have been more, observant of what my child was doing or not doing. And so, I think that that is the grief part about it is the letting go. Number one, what you said is you see. Without the releasing of the balloons, and then the accepting or the letting go of the responsibility is the other aspect of it. Some things are just not your fault, so.
Yes. And that goes back to, if we were to go back to some of the foundations of Black family structure, I think we'll be able to save our children. The other reality is we work. Like the Columbine mom said, hey, I noticed some things, but my commute, I had to work. I had to put food on the table. Well, that is real for African-American families. And so I have a father who is a former Black Panther, and so I was raised with these different kinds of views. But in the 70s, he had told me about an MIT study that was done that simply said, it's kind of like the Willie Lynch, and it was along the lines of, and I'm paraphrasing, here's how to destroy Black families. Let the African-American mother become educated, move up in her careers. She'll be work concerned. She will castrate the husband. She will emasculate him because he's underperforming, and he will then either have an affair, turn to drugs, or be locked up or be killed, and the children will be left to themselves. Now, that was in the 70s as I'm growing up and hearing this and, thinking my father is a conspiracy theorist because of his own background. But then here we are in 2016. African-American women are outpacing men economically and occupationally. African-American men, in some ways are emasculated in the media, metrosexual, all kinds of things. And our children are left to ourselves. And I often think of, that what my father told me, and I'm like, well, here it is today. And then my own self pursuing a PhD, higher in my career, and I'm like, it's real and it's here. And our children are left to themselves. But the reality is, how do you balance? And I was thinking this yesterday. I was like, either I can be with my children, I can be with you, I can impart, and we can be stressed about money and how we're going to eat, or I can work. What is the balance here? And in thinking, how can we save our children, that question has to be answered. But I think it's answered foundationally because there was a community raising us.
Us,
and today we don't have that community.
Well, Ms. Summers, we are closing in on our last 5 minutes. I want to give you an opportunity to share about your organization, some of the things that you have coming up here. Anyone is listening, if you do have any questions, you can go to the website, TrinityCounselingCharlotte.com. You can go to, and you can pull up this and archive this program. It has some links to life skills counseling, and also has links to Mothers Against Murdered Offspring. You're welcome to email melissatrinitycounseling@gmail.com. And I'm just going to give the last 5 minutes or the last 4 minutes to you just to share about what you have coming up with your organization.
Yay. Thank you so much, Melissa.
You're welcome.
Again, mm-hmm. I am just simply doing work with Mothers of Murdered Offspring, who right now their number one mission is decreasing the number of homicides in Charlotte. Last year we were at 64. This year we hope to that number does not go over 30. So this year we're taking a more spiritual approach, you know, handling things spiritually as well as naturally continuing to assist families. I run the Life Skills Counseling and Consulting Group here in Charlotte, where we provide mental health and substance abuse services to families in the community. We are not an African-American agency, but predominantly African-American. We are here because we believe counseling works, and we want African-American families, you know, to get the help that is needed to work through you know, complicated griefs or things that just affect us, urban violence, community violence. Melissa, you were talking about PTSD. Well, there is a such thing as racial battle fatigue as a result of, you know, living in a hostile world. African Americans experience racial battle fatigue. So definitely look that up to the, you know, the community. Look that up. It is real. And so just something, and you know, just something to know. But just in capitalizing on what we've already said, you know, hey, counseling works. We've got to be able to talk about issues. And in order to save our children, we've got to, you know, take a look at some of the foundational structures of African-American families and restore them. I simply believe that's just one of hopefully many interventions to be able to save our kids. But we've got to do something. We've got to do something. And the political climate right now, oh, Lord have mercy, we need to do something sooner rather than later. I'm sure that's a whole other conversation. But, Melissa,
do you
I thank
want
you
to mention
so much
your,
for the time.
Well, do you
Go
want
ahead.
To mention your yoga your or your trainings or any of those things?
Yes. One thing that Life Skills does is we do our best to provide trainings for mental health professionals and try to make it affordable and so that it's, you know, less time. Don't have me sitting somewhere all day. Just give me what I need and a little bit of time. And so on Friday, April the 8th, from 9 to noon, we have a workshop called Don't Hold Your Breath, Incorporating Yoga and Meditation into Counseling. So the link for that, to register for that, is www.lifeskillsccgroup.com under trainings. Yep, thank you so much. And, Melissa, I hope you'll be able to make it to that. You know, therapists are infamous for holding our breath. We're waiting to exhale.
You know, I appreciate that. I do believe that yoga works. Trinity Counseling Services, I do primarily substance work, mental health counseling, and I do encourage our clients to get involved in that as well. That, you know, the whole word yoga means to yoke together, which means balance. And I believe that, you know, sometimes our bodies get separated. So I am a fan of yoga. I was once upon a time a practicer of it, and I do think that there are merits to that for practitioners and for clients alike. Uh-huh. We're at 90 seconds, and let me just say that I appreciate you and this discussion that we have had this morning. I'm glad that you reached out, and I'm glad for the opportunity for us to come together and have this conversation, because counseling does work. Again, I believe that, you know, with wisdom, you know, with knowledge, with instruction, you know, we can make some changes. Trinity is education, enrichment, and enlightenment. I do believe in educating individuals. I believe that everyone does have a value, and I believe at some point we're going to get to the point where we're all going to be able to tell our stories and tell how we made it. And with that, I just want to thank God right now. Heavenly Father, we just want to come to you. We want to thank you for the coming together. We want to thank you for the opportunity to learn the things that we've learned today, to have the conversation that we have had today. And God, as we go forward, we continue to just ask you that's going to lead and guide us in the way that you would have us to go. I am Melissa, and thank you so much, God. And thank you, Ms. Summers. And we're going to close out. Thank you all for listening. And have a blessed day. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right.